Porky.
Yes.
It's time for another Ask Porky.
It certainly is.
We are, of course, the Two Mics.
That's
this
right.
is the On The Record podcast series.
That's right.
Which is doing remarkably well.
It is, with our friends at Audio Boom.
Our friends at Audio
yes.
Boom. And available on Tuesdays and
yes.
Thursdays of every week.
Absolutely.
We may be expanding upon that.
Yes.
But we don't know yet.
Yes,
if
absolutely.
We can do that.
Absolutely.
But Ask Porky, very popular. This is where people basically ask you questions that you, with your years of experience
yeah.
in many different fields, are able to answer.
Yes, absolutely.
We're
well, I'm happy
off.
To help my flock, you know.
We're going to kick
help
off. With,
flock, I should say, yeah.
With one from Twitter,
okay.
Which was posted just a few hours ago, and it's from Michael, who says this.
Mm.
What does Porky usually eat for breakfast? Does he have a great big fry up, or does he go down the Alan Brazil route of eating a bowl of Frosties
yeah.
because they're great?
No, I know that you're talking about the lion in the Frosties advert. What was his name?
Tony the Tiger.
Tony the Tiger, that's
he wasn't
right.
A
he
lion.
Wasn't a
lion,
he was a tiger.
Yeah.
Tony the Tiger, he was very good indeed. No,
put a tiger in your tank used to be the SO thing.
Put a tiger in your tank, that was the SO thing, that's absolutely right, yeah. Tigers have featured big in my life, throughout my life, and in fact...
Have they?
Tigers should not be in captivity, but that's another story.
Shouldn't
we'll get
you support
to that
the
later.
Leicester Tigers, though?
Leicester Tigers, no. They're a hockey team, aren't they?
I think they're a rugby team.
Rugby team, are they? Yeah, OK. Right, now, what I want to say to you is...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, breakfast regime, OK?
Yes.
My breakfast regime is absolutely simple.
Is it?
I have a sausage butty on Mondays.
Right.
A bacon... sandwich butty on Tuesdays.
Do you reuse the sausage fat by any chance?
Well, I've got a new pan,
oh, yeah?
And the pan drains all the fat off. It's got one of those covers, you know?
All right.
Where all the
is
fat
that
drains
like George
off.
Foreman the grill?
Not really. It's it does have wavy bits on the base, but then it has a mesh dish on top of it.
Okay.
And all the fat comes out of them.
I see.
So I have skinless sausage sandwich on Monday, bacon sandwich
bacon
on Tuesday.
Yes.
And that is repeated ad infinitum.
What, so Wednesday
sausage
bacon,
sausage,
on
Wednesday,
Thursday
yeah.
bacon, Friday
yes.
sausage,
yes.
Saturday bacon,
yes, that's right, yes.
Sunday sausage?
Yes, that's right,
oh,
yeah.
My
yeah,
goodness
every day.
And is it always on white bread, brown bread?
I like it on white bread.
Okay.
And if I decide in my... I get a Warburton's thick sliced toasty loaf.
Oh, yeah.
And if I decide it's just a day too much,
uh-huh.
I then toast it and have a toasted sausage
okay.
sandwich or a toasted bacon sandwich.
Do you
sandwich.
Ever do it on a baguette?
I do it on baguettes on a Sunday. On a Sunday, I drive up to the Co-op in a place called Banstead,
okay,
right?
Okay, yeah.
And
that's
buy...
quite a long way away, isn't it?
No, it's about 10 minutes.
Is it?
And I buy them fresh. They cook them on the premises, right? And you can smell the bread as you go
yeah,
in.
Yeah.
It's absolutely beautiful, you
right.
know? And I get them fresh, and on Sundays I treat myself to fresh baguettes
yes.
with sausage and bacon.
Sausage and bacon?
Yes, that's right.
Well,
yeah.
It's really pushing the bacon.
I've won sausage
are you
and
sure
won
that's
bacon.
A good idea, a man of your years and the health
yeah.
dangers that you're in?
No, I think it's great. And the other thing is, I did used to like cereal, but the problem was I started to develop some sort of allergy to wheat.
Oh, I think they have diabetes as well.
I have got diabetes, so I don't eat Frosties.
And they're very sweet.
They're sweet and all that kind of stuff. So used to be Frosties,
yeah.
which I loved. And then I used to have 8 Weetabix a morning.
8?
Yes, 8, yeah.
No way can people eat more than 4.
No,
that's
no.
what the advert does.
No. You get them out and you put them in a huge bowl,
yeah.
mash them all up, and then put
right.
hot milk over them.
Okay.
And I used to love them.
That's like a load of porridge then.
I suppose it was a bit, yeah.
So you're talking about having to go gluten-free now.
Well, the problem is that really upset my insides, my stomach and everything, you know, and I went sort of a bit weirdo. So then I was actually able to turn it around because I thought, right, I know what I'm going to do. Rice Krispies.
Yeah.
Now,
also
Rice Krispies,
very sweet.
Yeah, but Rice Krispies are made of rice, not made
well,
of
corn. Well, I don't think they're
corn.
Made of anything. They're made
not
of something artificial.
Wheat or something.
Aren't
and
they
I like
the things that go snap, crackle and pop?
Snap, crackle and pop and all that. Not Tony the Tiger, and I used to love those, but they started making me feel funny as well. So I now stick to only the meat products.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Okay, very
love
good.
Love it. Yeah, the only other thing I have is, and we've done this on TMTV,
yeah.
Mike Graham's Kitchen,
yeah.
is the old kipper sandwich sometimes.
Kipper sandwich. In fact, that's going to be out soon, isn't
it? It is.
Is it already out?
It's going to be out imminently.
I think it's going to be out imminently. Right, question again from Simon. This is on
Facebook
this time.
Okay.
Porky, what would you say was your proudest moment in Fleet Street?
Proudest moment in Fleet Street? My proudest moment in Fleet Street was when Sir Larry Lamb, who was permanently pissed, by the way, completely pissed all the
now,
time.
He?
He's dead, but
he can't sue you.
He was a Yorkshireman. He was a big friend of Geoffrey Boycott's, and he had a typical Yorkshire accent. And he'd say things like this, you know, Mr. Parry, I think it's time that you and I got down to the American Grill at Savoy and talk some fucking business, right?
So he sounds a bit like Graham Kelly.
A bit like, no, Graham Kelly was Lancashire.
No.
Larry was Yorkshire.
Okay.
So I told you, Mr. Valley, I'm fucking sending you to New York. You understand me?
No.
I want you to turn over that fat bastard. What's his name? Brian Vine. That's right. Yeah, Brian. Brian Vine. Turn over that bastard Brian Vine, and you can have his job. Okay, I'm bringing him back. He spends too much fucking money and doesn't do any fucking work. Oh, you know. Yeah. Trouble with Solari was when he got to the Express. He'd already been knighted by Mrs. Thatcher for being the editor of The Sun and winning her an election. So that displeased Mr. Murdoch. Yes. Mr. Murdoch's a Republican. Yes. Doesn't believe in royal patronage, okay?
So
it is alleged.
Is
it is alleged. It is alleged.
How extraordinary.
And we didn't fire him. He appointed him to a newspaper in Australia. Mm. And I think it was the one in Perth. I think it was the Western Australian or something like that. And when Larry rang up Rupert, who was then based in London or New York or somewhere, and said, Rupert, Larry, I'm settling in nicely, but, you know, I am the editor and I do not have my private bathroom.
Right.
Where is my fucking private bathroom? And Mr. Murdoch allegedly said, Larry, you're in Australia. Piss out a window like everybody else does. And that was it.
Yeah, I've heard that story. Mm. Now, here's one from John. Dear Porky, my wife wants to move to Edinburgh, but I'm happy living in Newcastle. Should I stay or should I go, as the clash
Well,
say.
It depends what reason you're moving there for. Mm. I think Newcastle's a brilliant city. Some half-baked moron at TalkSport made an unfortunate comment about Newcastle a couple of weeks ago.
There's nothing to do there, right?
Yeah, not do that. I mean, he was just trying to get a soundbite. You know, anybody can say that. If you suddenly pipe up,
there are lots of places in Britain that you can say there's nothing to do. Newcastle's not one of them.
No, Newcastle's not one of them. And it's very, very poor, in my view, sort of journalism, just to attack somebody in the hope that you'll get a response. Because you always get a response from people who are Geordies.
Indeed.
I wouldn't move from Newcastle. I mean, I'm planning to move to Newcastle and retire anyway.
Really?
Or the environs of, you know, like the Tynemouth coast. Do you know what I mean? Like the Northumberland coast, maybe up to Lindisfarne or something like that. However, you know better than me, you know, Edinburgh is a fine city.
It is.
The problem is that it's Scottish, and therefore I would always feel like an outsider there.
I must admit, I'd forgotten, I was up there recently, I'd forgotten quite how wild the place is, you know.
Yeah,
a lot of
wild.
People shouting, a lot of blatteration going on, and a hell of a lot of tourists as well, by the way. I mean, so many Americans staggering about, talking about Edinburgh, and a load of Japanese tourists who don't know where to go.
Sure.
They're just getting your way all the time.
But the other thing about Newcastle is that, you know, you can actually do Newcastle geographically in an hour and a half.
Yeah.
You start at the big market, work your way down to the quayside, and then you stay on the quayside all night. Trouble with Edinburgh is I always found very hard walking there, up and down hills.
Up and down hills.
Fucking miles to walk
There's
to get anywhere.
There's loads of different bits of it.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I went on a bit of a sort of a shopping stroke sightseeing.
Yeah.
Walked about 8 miles.
He would have walked about
8 miles.
And in the end, you can walk down that road where I stayed when we went up there and did the Edinburgh Festival, and you get to,
Leith.
The key at the end?
Yeah,
Leith Key, that's right, yeah.
Which used to be full of hookers.
Yeah.
But they've cleaned it up.
They've cleaned it up indeed.
And in fact, the Royal Yacht Britannia is now down there. So
Britannia.
That's it.
Britannia rules the waves.
Saul says this, Porky, do you ever think you'll retire completely?
No, I won't. I definitely won't.
Mm.
In fact, you may or may not know of a colleague of ours who works at the Daily Mail called Tom Utley.
Tom Utley,
And Tom is
I used to know Tom when he worked at the Express.
That's right. Well, Tom, for the last, I think, 25 years, has worked at the Daily Mail.
Yeah.
He's a political correspondent. And funny enough, when I was running and starring in the ill-fated TV station Sports Night Live, I'd leave there about 11:30, make a quick dash to Victoria Station for the last train home, about 10 past 12, but always managed to get a couple of pints in the Witherspoon's bar in Victoria, and I used to see Tom because Tom was the late reporter in the Commons.
Oh, yeah.
So the Commons used to sit till 10 o'clock in those days, and he was always the guy who was filing at 10:30.
Yeah.
We used to meet up for a quick pint about half past 11.
Okay.
Couple of pints. Now, he does a column every Friday in the Daily Mail. He wrote one a couple of weeks ago and said, I've been looking forward to retirement for 39 years. Because
39
I'm basically an idle person.
Right.
You know? He came out of Corpus Christi College, Cambridge.
A very clever man.
A very clever man, but admits to himself he'd have had a lot more drive or something. He'd done what a lot of his mates from Cambridge did, made millions in the city or, you know, become architects or something like that. He just thought journalism was an easy option.
Well, he's quite
option.
A loose character, isn't he?
A very loose character. He put four of his sons through private school, and that took all his wages in his middle years and all that.
Right.
But I think on the day he wrote this piece, retirement's coming off a week on Thursday, and he expressed the sheer terror and fear of not knowing what he's going to do on that day.
Right.
Because his pattern of work was always to get up and, you know, just organise himself till 11 o'clock, go to work at 12, Commons opened up at 2 o'clock, he'd have a, you know, a big lunch with four or five pints with his mates, sit in the gallery, watch it all unfold in front of him, and then be writing until 9 or 10 o'clock at night.
Stories,
and then go home. And that was a pattern that he realises now how much he loved. So the thing about retirement is, people go on about, oh, you know, I'm stuck in a rut, I'm in a routine. People love routine.
It makes
them feel that there's a purpose in life.
But without a routine, you can be lost.
Absolutely.
Completely.
Absolutely.
Now, speaking of routine, Stephen says this on Twitter. Porky, who do you think should replace Jose Mourinho at Manchester United when the inevitable happens?
The inevitable happens, and there's a new story every day. And, of course, the latest was that Zinedine Zidane actually rang Jose to say... Jose, it is Zinedine here. Do not believe all the stories that I want your job. I do not want your job. Don't worry. Well, that to me, you know, it's like me ringing you and saying, by the way, Mike, people, you know, hinting I want to get rid of you. I don't want to get rid of you, you know, and all that kind of stuff. Mm. You know what I mean?
Mm.
So you can bet your life there's something going on there. Manchester United's not working. Pogba's the problem because he's not. He hates.
Well, I'm not even sure if Pogba's the only problem. There's clearly more problems than Pogba.
Yeah, I tell you, agree.
You know,
I tell you, it's just not working. And,
I mean, they've got a defence that looks about as leaky as a sieve.
Shocking,
right?
Shocking.
That game against West Ham.
Yeah.
I mean, even West Ham fans are going, actually, it wasn't that great of a game because they weren't very good.
3 weeks before they played West Ham, West Ham were rock bottom of the Premier League without a point.
Yeah.
And they turned over Manchester United. Something is going to have to happen.
They did turn over Everton as well. I don't mean to gloss over.
Something is going to have to happen there. What are you putting that in for?
Well,
I didn't bring that. I'm answering the fucking questions.
Because I just want to point out the fact.
Something is going to happen there, and it's inevitable.
Do you think it might be Zinedine Zidane then?
Well, if I was running Manchester United, that's a problem, because the guy running Manchester United, Ed Woodward, really, I don't think, has got a clue about appointing managers, because he used to be the finance director, and he was finance director until David Gill left, and David Gill left at exactly the same time as Sir Alex Ferguson.
I never understood how they let that happen.
And so Ed Woodward has never appointed a successful manager.
Yes.
So why would you let him appoint another manager? You know, you wouldn't. If you were the owners, the Glazers, they'd say, no, fuck off, Ed. We've got to get somebody who knows more about a football club.
But Ed Woodward's meant to be the genius that has held the whole place together.
He's made all the money. He's made loads of money.
There's no question about
the money. They keep Ed for the money-making business, but they would say, Ed, go find a consultancy or somebody somewhere to find us a proper manager.
Exactly. Pell says, what's the biggest bet Porky has ever placed, if any?
Well, I'm not a betting man. I'm basically not a betting man.
Are you sure?
I love having a punt on the Grand National. I bet on every horse whose jockey is wearing blue silks, okay, because of my devotion to Everton Football Club. But I've never... Oh, I tell you what it was. Yeah, I remember once, on the day of the Derby, I used to go with David Emery, the sports editor, and we used to go to a place called the Epsom Club in Epsom, which is a gentleman's club.
Uh-huh.
And it was at the bottom of the hill where the hill went up to the Epsom Downs.
Right.
And we'd always have tickets for a lunch up there, and a car would come and pick us up and we'd go. Great days racing and all that. And then at the end of the day, we'd come back to the Epsom Club and we'd play three-card brag.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember one year, right, and this wasn't a bet, it was a calculation, a gamble.
Mm.
There was six or eight of us playing three-card brag, and eventually people drop out because they don't want to go any further.
Yeah, right.
They don't want to put any more money on.
Yeah, they fold.
It was me against one other guy.
Yeah.
And this other guy's name
was... And were you blind at the time?
Oh, blind. It was all blind. It was all blind.
You were both blind?
Both blind.
That's crazy.
Both blind.
Mad.
And so, what I'm saying is, this wasn't skill or anything like that.
Mm.
I was just so pissed,
and
I just decided, fuck you, £1,000.
£1,000. That's a lot of money in those days.
Yeah, that's right. And, and there were six. That came from six people, right? £1,000. Must have put in 150 quid each or something like that, or 100, and I'd put more in.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just kept piling on.
Right.
And Jez eventually...
Mm.
Said, you know, I'll see you. Well, I can't remember how you do it.
I'll
see you. Turn it over, and I had one card stronger than his, like an 8-7 or something like that.
Yeah.
And I scooped £1,000. I was so pleased, right?
Yeah.
I went to the payphone. We didn't have any mobile phones in those days. And I rang my deputy news editor, Ian Walker, who was in the Popinjay bar.
Yeah.
And I said, great fucking news, you know, I've won £1,000.
Uh-huh.
And I can remember to this day, Walker holding the phone away in complete disdain, saying, oh, the news editor's rang me to say he's won £1,000 playing cards in Epsom. You know, and... that was the best.
That's not bad. Here's one from Lee, similarly talking about money. Porky, yep. I'm about to receive 10 grand following some where there's a blame, there's a claim.
Right.
Should I invest it or blow it by treating the family to some blado in Modo in New York?
Depends how old you are, pal. Now, we don't know how old you are, but if it's 10 grand and you're 24 years of age, I would slap that down on a property. Now, you're going to say, what do you get for 10 grand?
Well, you're not getting much for that, will you?
Well, it depends where you are. Yeah. If you're in Burnley and there is a terraced house for sale for £120,000, slap it down on that. And I mean that sincerely, because you can rent that house out, you know. You can get a mortgage on it. The mortgage of £100,000 is not a lot these days. Yeah. Interest rates are so low. And you'll make more money on the rental return than you do on the mortgage. And eventually, you'll pay a bit more off here, there and there, and then you could draw money out of the house and go and buy the one next door and then buy yourself a street full of houses.
Well, that sounds
like
a big investment from 10,000, doesn't it? Yeah. One final question. Tom, I have a badger in my garden and it keeps digging up my brand new lawn. Yeah. How do I get rid of it?
Well, there's a debate going on in this country about badgers. Some say that they spread bovine tuberculosis,
that's
right?
That's right, they do.
Well, there's an argument. Some, you know, farmers want them shot dead and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. But there's other people like Brian May, the guitarist from Queen.
That's right.
Who you and I have interviewed in our studio personally. He's a great guy. And, of course, part of one of the most legendary rock groups of all time, Queen, with Freddie Mercury.
Yeah.
Who says you've got to save the badger. If a wild animal is desecrating your property, I believe you have every right to humanely get rid of that that animal, right?
Put it down.
Yeah. I mean, what I hate to see, and you see it sometimes on the A3 going up and down to the coast and all that, is a badger that's been killed by a car and left, you know, dead on the side of the road.
They do.
I don't like to see that.
Bit of damage to your car if you hit them as well.
Oh, they do, yeah.
They're quite
they
big.
They do. They're very big. Brock, they're known as.
Brock.
Brock, because of the white thing on the...
Okay.
In fact, remember our former deputy editor, Paul Potts?
Yeah.
He had a son who's called Badger, and that's because...
Really?
When he was... Well, he wasn't called Badger, his name was something else, but when he was about 1 year of age, he got a full head of hair, he had a white flush of hair...
How bizarre.
...over his head, and he was always known as Badger.
So he looked like a badger?
He looked like a badger.
That's very unusual. Mm. Right, back to Facebook for some more questions for Ask Porky.
Okay.
Because obviously it is that sort of time.
Yeah.
You've answered a lot already. We've still got time for a few more questions. I'm going to have to say that we will be with you very, very shortly. What I'm going to ask you now is going to be one that has been hanging around for a while, but it's taken me a while to find it. My apologies, but I will find it.
That's all right, you find it, and I'll talk you through it, OK?
Here we go.
If you knew how to use your magical equipment like I do, you wouldn't have these problems,
that's
all right?
That's true. Yeah. Here's one from John, who says, Porky, this is a bit philosophical, what would you say is your greatest strength and your greatest weakness?
My greatest strength is loyalty to my friends, OK? Mm. I try to help people out when they're in trouble and all that kind of stuff. But that's got me into a lot of problems over the years.
Has it? You
know? A lot of problems over the years. Only recently I had contact with a friend who I hadn't spoken to for 5 or 6 years. And it wasn't a pleasant contact at all. It was about, you know, money owed and all that kind of stuff. I didn't want to get into it. So it doesn't go away. My weakness... is the same, really, for not being able to evaluate situations properly.
Right.
Also, is it a weakness
to... judgment, then, is what you're saying.
Judgment. Is it a weakness to overvalue yourself? Mm. I have a very high opinion of myself.
Well, there's no reason not to have a high opinion
of yourself. I feel that I have an exceptional talent in the area of communications.
I don't think you're wrong about that.
When people start not to recognise it, I get upset with them.
Yep.
And I sometimes abuse them.
Do you?
And tell them what I think of them, you know.
Okay.
And that doesn't lead to good situations sometimes.
No.
You
well,
know,
I
that
mean,
can be a problem.
Maybe to be like that than it is to be, you know, hiding your light under a bushel.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
I also believe that, you know, I look after my family, as you do.
Yes.
You know, it's very... And most people do, by the way. Most people look after their families and that kind of stuff. But another weakness of mine is really... not wanting anybody else in my life.
Yes.
I mean, there's a weakness, definitely, OK? I've never been married and all that.
Well, you might say that.
And that's because I really think I know how to do it and I don't want sort of influences to try and make me think about other things. Quite selfish, really, but that's the answer to your question.
All right. Mm. Gavin says this, half and half scarves, the most criminal purchase known to man or socially acceptable by the modern-day fan.
Yeah.
Please discuss. By the way, he says, I'm a West Bromwich Albion season ticket holder who wouldn't buy one, not even if we somehow got into Europe, which is where the origin likely
comes
from.
I think they're absolutely dreadful, and I totally agree. West Brom should be back in the Premier League next season, right?
Yeah.
And I hope they are, because I've got a mate at West Brom, a really, really nice guy called Glenn, who's got a box at West Brom, and I enjoy being invited into his box.
I'm sure you do.
And when I go up there from London, right, there's a station called Smethwick, right, on the Intercity.
Oh, we know Smethwick, yeah.
On the Intercity line,
yeah.
And it's about 200 yards
from
West Brom.
One of our followers is called Smethwick Mon.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, he lives in Texas at the moment.
Oh, okay, yeah, okay. And it's easy to get off the train now, jump into a chauffeur-driven car provided for me, and being taken to the Hawthorns. What was the question? I'm sorry, forgotten. Was it? What was the question?
Well, we're just asking about whether you approve of half and half
scarves. Oh, I say no, I hate them. So, anyway, one time we were in Athens, and Liverpool were playing in the Champions League final against AC Milan, who they'd beaten in that famous final that came back from 3-0 down at half-time, the Steven Gerrard final, 2 years earlier. In where was that played? That was played in Turkey, I think, wasn't it? Yeah, it was in Istanbul.
Yeah.
Well, this one was in Greece 2 years later. Same two teams. This time AC Milan. But what we did is we took over a hotel and we managed to put the studio up on the roof because, of course, the weather's very good in Athens all the time. You know, and.
Could you see the Parthenon from there?
Yeah, you could. Yeah, could see everything. You know, the mountain and the Parthenon on the top of it, all that kind of stuff. You know, and the lady who organised it all took a real shine to me.
Oh yeah,
and her name was, believe it or not, Helena.
Helena.
So
I
called her Helen of Troy. That's right, absolutely. I said, Helen of Troy, you're here. Anyway. What happened was on the day, they'd all become Liverpool fans because we were English. I said, no, don't become a Liverpool fan. I'm not a Liverpool fan. Yeah. By the way, Liverpool fans turned up in their tens of thousands and mobbed in the square in the middle of Athens where you could go down and get so many interviews. You know, it was falling off the trees for you. No problem at all. Great characters and great comedians, great people from Liverpool, you know. I said, no, you can't. She said, oh, please. And tonight we will sit in front of the television when you go to the stadium and we will watch Liverpool. Can you get us some scarves?
Right.
So we sent a bloke out to get four Liverpool scarves for Helena and her other three assistants.
Yeah.
And they came back with these bastard, you know, half and half scarves which weren't Liverpool scarves.
Right.
They were a celebration of the game.
Yeah.
And Helena was disgusted. You know, what is this? I do not support these Italian bastards, you know, and all this kind of stuff.
But that's for all the FIFA big shots that turn up and say, look what I did. I went to this European Cup final and I didn't know which team to support, so I'm wearing this.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's
so
the
you're
answer.
Not in favour.
No.
Tom says this, with all the uncertainty regarding Brexit, would you recommend buying my first house or waiting for it to unfold further to avoid any disappointment?
Yeah, okay. I saw that one come in and I sort of answered it a little bit with a hint saying always buy property. I would always buy property because I think I wouldn't wait at all.
Yeah.
Now, the problem is that we've got, you know, half-bakes like Philip Hammond, who's the current Chancellor.
Mm.
We've got half-bakes like the guys running the Bank of England, you know, the Canadian half-bake. Yeah, Carney, yeah. And they're all, you know, the fear and doom of Brexit.
The two half-bakes make a full-bake.
Yeah, make a full-bake, that's right. They're a pair of bakes. And Carney in particular said property will shrink in value by 35%. That has killed the current property market. So you walk down any street where there's a chain of estate agents, because they all tend to be close to each other in most towns. They're in one particular street. And you will now see, as I was watching this morning, 375,000 reduced to 340,000.
Mm.
That is a dead property market, right? Because once you announce that, we've reduced the price. Two things kill a property market. One, if a property's on the market for too long.
Yeah.
After 2 months, you take it off.
Yeah.
And you leave it off for a couple of months and
put
it back on.
Exactly.
Mm. But if somebody comes to how long's that been on the market, you say 12 months, you say, right, he's obviously desperate to sell it.
And also everybody can find out as well.
Of course they can.
What he paid for it.
Of course they can.
How long ago it was last sold. What the house next door sold for.
Of course they can.
There's so much improved information.
I would say in the current market, don't be frightened of getting into property. Take advantage. It's like when the stock market dips and people say, oh, I've lost a lot of money.
Yeah.
What the shrewd investors do is they buy in.
Yeah.
Because you're right at the bottom of the market, and those markets will always go up. I mean, fortunately, what you call ISAs, I have stock market related ISAs and have had for 20 years, and they have never fallen back. They've always, I mean, when I bought them, I think the market was at about 5,500, less 5,000. Market's now at nearly 8,000.
Right.
You know, they're always,
it's always going up.
Property's always going to help you.
eventually. Here's one from Jonathan. He says, Porky, the Ryder Cup has been brilliant. Two questions. Who's your favourite European player? And more importantly, what do you think we should do with the completion? I think he means the competition. When we leave the European Union, should it be back to the UK versus the USA?
No. Look, the old Ryder Cup was last week, the week before. And it was a great celebration of Britain and all that. The outstanding man was Tommy Fleetwood. And Tommy Fleetwood's an Evertonian. So it was a great weekend up, because that was the weekend when Everton won 3-0 at home against Fulham. We won the Ryder Cup. Tommy Fleetwood was the star of the Ryder Cup. And I had a lovely family lunch, which involved my niece, Karen, which was great. But I'm not a great Ryder Cup fan, to be honest. I think it's a... You see, I think it's gerrymandered.
It's a bit overhyped, isn't it?
I think it's gerrymandered. And I don't like... You're absolutely right. The fact that the team come over here a week before the event and have fashion parades and... big dinners and
big pro-ams,
it's bollocks. It's bollocks. Get on with the fucking golf, and let's just see the golf. And I don't like four balls, and I don't like pairings.
Most people don't really understand. Everybody likes the last day.
That's
it's
right.
One mano a mano against another one.
Exactly.
But they don't like the foursomes.
But I mean, I also think it's very unfair for one player to have to depend on another. So, for instance, Rory McIlroy gets a ball right off the edge of the lake, if you remember, on the slope. Pings it onto the green, that's the shot of the tournament.
Right.
But then all his mate's got to do, takes the next shot, is tap in a 2-foot putt. Yeah. And the wrong guy gets the credit, you know?
Well, I mean, it's not as simple as that. I mean, I've played in golf games where you're partnered with somebody and either they are fucking useless or you are.
Yes.
You know, and I've been playing with people before where.
Yeah, it's usually you I suppose.
It's not actually always me, but certainly there have been times when, you know, the guy hits you straight down the middle of the fairway and you then put the guy in the water.
Straight down the middle.
Straight down the middle.
Did you used to play with Eamon in America?
Yeah, but Eamon wasn't a very good golfer.
No, no.
I mean, in fact, he was more interested in drinking.
No, exactly. He liked the social side of golf, didn't he?
He did.
This is a fantastic picture of Eamon, yourself, Mickey Brennan, all walking around with umbrellas on some golf course.
Probably.
You know what I'm talking about?
Probably, yes. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah,
I remember him always, he was always in a big cart.
Yes.
Because he always had to get the biggest cart he could get his hands on.
To get all the booze
load
in the back.
With booze
That's right,
in the back.
Yeah. Absolutely.
With a fridge full of beer.
Yeah.
Ian says, Porky, any memories of the recently departed James Lawton? He calls him Doyen of the Sports Gutter Press.
Without a shadow of a doubt.
Which is a bit harsh. I think Doyen of the Sports Press.
Without a shadow of a doubt. James Lawton was a great man. He was a great, great guy, Jimmy, and I loved him. I worked with him at the Express for a number of years. He was obviously in the sports department. I was on the newsroom. The two areas were next to each other, and I'd always see Jimmy and talk to him. I was in news in those days. I was a news editor, so I was fascinated. Jimmy Lawton got me tickets for the FA Cup final when Everton got there in the 80s, you know, before I had enough contacts in the FA and all that kind of stuff. He was a terrific guy. I went to the World Cup in 1990. Jimmy was working, but I'd gone as news editor, more or less as a fan, really.
Yeah.
Then got arrested, you know, for the old Isabella Cray scandal.
In Sardinia.
In Sardinia, that's right, yeah. And I had a several great nights with Jimmy, you know, into the little...
He was a great character.
Tratts. It was, they're called Trattorias, aren't they, in Italy, the little restaurants, you know.
That's right.
And a lot of pasta and all that. And then the next time I bumped into him professionally... Because after that, I moved on, was in 1996 in Atlanta, where I was heading up, you know, the massive press association team.
Oh, yes.
In our, you know, in our area,
so
in, the, in the press
in
centre.
In charge, but not really doing much.
I was in charge, man, because, you know, we had like, you know, I don't know, 26 people there. Had a huge area in the press centre in Atlanta. Martin Lipton was one of the guys who worked for me. Now, you know, sort of chief soccer writer or something. First at the Mirror, then at the Sun. And Jimmy and I, again, got together a couple of times, you know, remembering the old days. Jimmy was such a fine writer. And for years, I carried around... a paragraph he'd written about Sachin Tendulkar. Is that his name?
Oh, Sachin Tendulkar, yeah.
Sachin Tendulkar. He said, trying to arrest Sachin Tendulkar's batting skill is like trying to catch the wind. And it was such a wonderful way of explaining it. I cut it out, I wrapped sellotape around it, and I carried it around in my wallet for years.
Yes.
And said to any journalist who got fucking, you know, funny with me like that, I said, listen, pal, when you can write like that, you can have a moan. Till then, fuck
off. Do you know,
off.
I had one like that, but it was from Hugh McIlvenny,
oh, right.
who wrote about it. Do you remember Johnny Owen? Who was a Welsh boxer.
He was the boxer who died in the ring.
That's
right.
And he wrote about that event brilliantly. And he said it was such a pity after this incredible sort of eulogy to the guy himself and what he was and where he'd come from, his mining town. What a pity that Johnny Owen became so fluent in such a dangerous language.
Yeah.
Isn't that great?
Very good, yeah, indeed. In fact, he was bantamweight, wasn't he? He was a tiny guy.
Yeah,
that's right, yeah.
Absolutely, but you're quite right, died in the ring.
Yeah.
Luke says, who in your opinion is the greatest Formula One driver of all time?
Well, I suppose most people would say Michael Schumacher. Mm. And you have to admit that he had 7 world titles. Mm. And at the moment, Lewis Hamilton's heading to his 5th.
Yeah.
And that in itself, you know, means that Lewis Hamilton's up there with the pantheon of great drivers.
Yeah.
However, some would say to you, yeah, but in the old days, you know, the drivers just got into a car and drove it, like Jim Clark, like Stirling Moss. Stirling Moss, amazingly, despite his fame, never became world champion.
Yeah.
He finished 2nd on 3 occasions,
right.
And a crash, you know, deprived him of one on his last season, all that kind of stuff. However, he was a very enduring man.
Yeah.
It's got to be Schumacher, because Schumacher
was so dominant.
Took to the sport in such a way. And remember, Schumacher had a lucky break in that he won his first 2 titles with the colours of Benetton, run by the international playboy who went on to manage Queen's Park Rangers.
QPR, yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember his name now.
Flory something?
I can't remember his name, but he was terrific. He was known as the playboy of the Western world, you know, the age of about 35.
He was an Italian guy,
and he was romancing every, you know, model and Miss World in the world and all that. But he was very successful as well and went on to half own and organised Queen's Park Rangers. And then Michael Schumacher went from there to, which team did he go to? It was McLaren, I can't remember
now. I think he ended up at McLaren, didn't he?
McLaren, I don't think it was McLaren, because McLaren was where Lewis Hamilton started as well. I think it was, Ferrari. He went to Ferrari, that's right. Yeah, he definitely. He went from colours of Benetton to Ferrari, spent 2 seasons at Ferrari just getting the car together.
Yeah.
I mean, people don't understand that Formula One racing drivers don't just race on the race day.
Mm.
They have to do hundreds of hours of practice, and at the end of each lap, they have to report to their engineers, that doesn't sound right, this is not working, that wheel's not taking
grip.
They're
all in simulators now as well, apparently.
All in simulators as well, but they have to get in the actual car itself and interpret the car to the engineers to make it better.
Yeah.
So the great tragedy, of course, about Michael Schumacher, one of the great sporting tragedies of all time, is after he'd retired, he goes skiing. He's in the Alps.
Yeah.
He skis off-piste a bit, hits a rock, falls forward and hits his head on another rock.
Yeah.
And although he had a helmet on, the elevation and the angle of his fall meant that the rock went through his helmet and pierced his head.
I know, shocking.
Giving him brain damage.
Yeah.
To this day, Michael Schumacher is in a hospital bed, in a coma, and his family fortune is dwindling at the rate of £100,000 a month in care.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
It really is. Mm. Absolutely incredible. Mm. Alan says this, any tips on doing jury service, Porky, from when you did it? I've been called up for it this November.
Yeah, well, I hated jury service. Some people I know have done jury service. Oh, wasn't it fascinating? Absolutely fascinating, you know, to see this. You know, it's free entertainment. No, I was working with you at the time. And if you remember, we had to turn down a couple of shows because I was in jury service.
Yes.
So I kept saying, what am I here for? So jury service is a minimum of 2 weeks, i.e. 10 days.
Yeah.
But if
if you're lucky.
That's if you're very lucky. If you get a case on the second week on a Wednesday, which is scheduled for 10 days, you have to stay the 10 working days. Yeah. So that's 3 weeks already.
Well, some people get stuck with one that goes on for months, don't they?
Months, if not like...
Did they ever pay you any money at all?
Well, I never claimed it. Right. You know, I couldn't be bothered. Right. I mean, the maximum is about £35 a day or something, compensation for your earnings. Mm. You know, well, that wouldn't buy me a drink, you know, so I didn't bother.
Well, luckily you don't drink as much as you used to.
No, exactly. So I bloody hated it. I really did. And, you know, I think it was involved in 3 trials, one that got abandoned, one that was over in 2.5 days, and then the last one, I appointed myself as jury foreman.
Yeah.
So we got into the...
I'm surprised nobody objected to that.
Well, I got in the jury room, and I immediately took control, as I do in situations.
Uh-huh.
And I said, right, we need to elect a jury foreman. So I'm just looking around the room here.
You're all a bunch of half-bakes.
Complete half-bakes. The unwashed and complete half-bakes.
Yeah.
Some of them were illiterate and shouldn't have been on the jury. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So I said, I suggest that I should be the jury foreman. Anybody want to object?
Yeah.
Ooh, a bit of murmuring. I said, right, I'm jury foreman. Right, let's get this guy convicted or released.
So he'll go home early.
Yeah, because I'm not staying another day, you know. Well, these 3 bleeding heart women in the corner, and unfortunately it was a case of a family sex abuse case, you know, the uncle, you know, being inappropriate with, you know, his niece or something like that, you know what I mean?
Yes.
And I said, this guy's definitely guilty.
Mm.
So, in my view, let's get it over and done with. Like, let's go round the room. Went round the room. 9 thought he was not guilty.
Right.
I said, right, I am of the view this man is completely innocent and not guilty. Right. So let's go and let's get this sorted. And within 2 hours, I convinced the three, you know, who wouldn't bend, that, you know. And they started crying, these women. No, we're letting this poor little girl down. I said, no, we're not.
Yeah.
I said, there's 12 of us. We all agree now that, you know, he's not guilty, okay? Oh, you agreed? Right. Don't change your mind. Shocking. Come on. Let's get back in the joint and we can fuck off.
Yeah. Absolutely horrendous.
Yeah.
Speaking of the great unwashed, Neil says, where does Porky's utter contempt and dislike of the great unwashed come from?
I don't have any contempt or dislike of the majority of the population of this country or of the world. However, there are certain people around who you would say were born to live average lives.
Oh, yes.
I do not believe I am one of them. And therefore, if you want to live an unaverage life,
yes,
you sometimes have to do it by making yourself better in the pecking order of life than most other people who are around, OK?
Right.
Now, some people do that to the nth degree. Like, for instance, Sir Paul McCartney.
Yes.
Like Sir Rod Stewart.
Mm.
Like Sir Richard Branson.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, Elon Musk, your mate, who's just been told to F off by his own company.
Although,
okay?
apparently, the fact that he's hanging around as some kind of you know, executive director or something or other has made the share price go absolutely through the roof again.
Is that right?
So even though you and I may think he's a bit of a half-bake, in fact,
this man could, of course, be tried now criminally for, breaking all the financial rules.
Well, he might be.
Promising, but, I mean, I'll take the company private.
Yeah.
Oh, have you got the funds? And he puts out his money and says, I've got the funds.
Yeah, yeah.
And they say, where are the funds? Right. He says, I'm not telling you.
I'm not telling
so
you.
Maybe he hasn't got the
funds.
Well, he is
a bit of a loose cannon. But the point is that the investors love him.
Mm.
And they say, we don't want the company to be run without him.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a bit of a quandary going on.
Okay. Right. So the answer is, what was the question again?
The answer was, why do you hate the Great Unwashed?
Oh, I don't hate the Great Unwashed. I love the Great Unwashed. I call them my flock, okay?
Yeah.
Millions of people follow MG and I. They are our flock.
Mm.
And I love them dearly.
One final question.
Mm.
Asked Porky this week. One place in the world, says JK, Porky hasn't been to but wants to go.
Hong Kong.
Hong Kong.
Yeah, I've been to most places in the world that I want to go. I don't like the Far East. I've been to Singapore. And that's the only place I've been in the Far East. I have absolutely no desire to go to Thailand.
Mm.
I have no desire to go to Cambodia, Vietnam, those sort of places.
I like Vietnam, I think.
Well, whatever. I've had to go there and see what the aftermath of the Vietnam War was like and all that kind of stuff. But, I don't like hot countries.
Mm.
So I hated doing jobs in the Middle East. I did a job once in the Lebanon.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like 45 degrees every day.
Yeah.
It's very unpleasant for me, that. You know, the fear of being locked up in an Arabian jail or a Middle East jail.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, drove me to distraction. Mm. I nearly got locked up in Libya. And it was very hot there as well.
Yes.
So the answer is, the only place I really can say I wouldn't mind going to, even though it's the Far East, but it's very cosmopolitan, is Hong Kong.
It's pretty hot there as well, I think.
It's very hot there, so I'd only want to go for 2 days on a stopover to Australia, you see what I mean? But just to say I've been to Hong Kong, just to see it. Now, my brother-in-law, who is married to Sue Ellen, right, he has been in the sort of retail business for a long time. He's gone to Hong Kong to buy bags and belts and all that kind of stuff.
Didn't you have a freebie to Hong Kong? You had to turn it down.
No, that was to Japan.
Oh, Japan.
Which I don't want to go because my sister got suddenly announced she was getting married.
Right.
My father was dead. I had to give her away. So I had to turn that trip down. But I have no great desire to go to Japan.
Mm.
All the places I wanted to go, like America and Russia and Australia and, you know, most of Europe. I love European capitals.
Uh-huh.
I've been to. And South America. I love going to South America, Argentina, Chile. Love going to the Caribbean.
Caribbean.
The Caribbean and all that kind of stuff. I've been to all those places. Maldives in the middle of the Indian Ocean. Mm. You know, great and all that.
Yeah.
Well, I've never been there, actually. I've been to the Seychelles. Seychelles, that's right. That's the one, yeah. Yeah. And
well, maybe the Maldives would be on your list, then.
Well, it's the same place, really, sort of, you know.
Okay.
But, yeah, the one place I think before I kick the bucket that I will make... I tell you the other place.
Yeah.
New Zealand.
New Zealand.
I'd love to go to New Zealand. I've been to Australia. I'm in New Zealand.
Yeah, I'm not sure about New Zealand.
Oh, I'd like to go just
quiet,
to...
I think.
Well, I want to go and see the big towns like Auckland and Wellington, and then I want to drive out for a day and find small town New Zealand, see what that's like. I've been to small town America, which is pretty fascinating.
It
you
is.
Know. I'd like to see small town New Zealand.
Okay. Mm. Well, that was Ask Porky. Thank you for answering all the questions.
Yep.
Sorry if your question didn't get asked, because there was an awful lot of them. We'll be doing it again very, very soon. We are the Two Mics.
Indeed. what I'm saying is, this wasn't skill or anything like that. I was just so pissed.
And
I just decided, fuck you, £1,000.
£1,000. That's a lot of money in those days.
Yeah, that's right. Mm. And there were six, that came from six people, right? £1,000. Yeah. Must have put in 150 quid each or something like that, or 100, and I'd put more in.
Yeah, yeah.
I just kept piling on.
Right.
And Jez eventually said, you know, I'll see you. I can't remember how you did it.
I'll see you.
Turn it over, and I had one card stronger than his, like an 8 to his 7 or something like that.
Yeah.
And I scooped £1,000. I was so pleased, right?
Yeah.
I went to the payphone. We didn't have any mobile phones in those days. And I rang my deputy news editor, Ian Walker, who was in the Popinjay bar.
Yeah.
And I said, great fucking news, you know, I've won £1,000. Uh-huh. And I can remember to this day, Walker holding the phone away in complete disdain, saying, oh, the news editor's rang me to say he's won £1,000 playing cards in Epsom. You know, and... that was the best. My weakness is the same, really, for not being able to evaluate situations properly.
Right.
Also, is it a weakness
to... Judgment,
is it a weakness to overvalue yourself?
Mm.
I have a very high opinion of myself.
Well, there's no reason not to have. I
feel that I have an exceptional talent in the area of communications.
I don't think you're wrong about that.
When people start not to recognise it, I get upset with them.
Yep.
And I sometimes abuse them.
Do you?
And tell them what I think of them, you know.
Okay.
What are you putting that in for? I didn't bring that. I'm answering the fucking questions.